This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Yes, indeed. Happy Wednesday, the May the 7th edition of Sports Talk. Steve Geller with Charlie Long bringing you until 8 p.m. this evening. This hour, we'll get into some college baseball chatter with Joe Healy, who writes for D1Baseball.com. Get into some things around the SEC and, of course, the upcoming series between LSU and Arkansas. Next hour, we'll delve more into Saints rookie camp coming up for the Black and Gold this weekend. And also, Cam Jordan Day will be celebrated tomorrow. We'll learn more about that with Mike Haas, Voice of the Saints, coming up at 7:25. Recapping some of the things that have been going on in the sports world, from the NBA playoffs to even a wild trade this morning. Looking at the NBA side of things, you mentioned to Charlie last segment the fact that what's going on with these road teams in the second round of the playoffs here? The home court advantage has not been a factor at all, and I think a major surprise has been the Indiana Pacers right now.
The first time in NBA history that every road team won game one of the conference semifinals. That is unbelievable. And what happened last night between the Pacers and the Cavaliers, Donovan Mitchell puts up this Herculean effort without Darius Garland, without Evan Mobley, without DeAndre Hunter. They're missing three key pieces of their roster, so Mitchell has to go off. And he almost puts up 50 in that game. And they have a 7-point lead with about 45 seconds left to go in the game, and they lose. Whoa. What happened? At the very end, Steve, when it was like Miles Turner tipped out the missed free throw, because for those that didn't watch the game, the Pacers were down three with like 10 seconds left to go in the game, and they put Tyrese Haliburton to the free throw line. He hits the first one, so they're down two. He misses the second one, and it taps out. Miles Turner gets a hand on it, then he taps it to Tyrese Haliburton to get the offensive board, and you're just thinking, oh my God. And you imagine everybody in Cleveland is at the same time holding their breath, and for good reason, because Tyrese Haliburton nails a three-point
dagger.
Shot. All of a sudden, you go from being up, once again, 7 points with 45 seconds left to losing and falling to 0-2 in the conference semifinals, both of those losses coming at home. Here's a stat that I wanted to share, because it's insane.
Yeah.
ESPN Stats and Info has this. Since 1997-1998, teams are 3-1,640 when trailing by 7-plus points in the final minute of the fourth quarter in overtime. The Pacers in this postseason have two of those wins. They did it to Milwaukee in the first round in that overtime victory that I think sent them home. I think that was the Game 5 win that they had. And then they did it last night. Once again,
3-1,640.
3-1,640. And this Pacers team has two of those wins in basically the last week and a half. It's insane. Like, this playoffs has been incredible. So,
can this Cavs team rebound now on the road? I know it's brutal thinking they just dropped their opening two games in their house.
I think they can, but I think like an 0-2 hole at home, I would need to look up the numbers of that. Like,
yeah,
how often that's happened for one. And then, two, how often a team has come back from losing both of your opening games at home? I don't think it's very often. So, you know, it's definitely a deep hole that they've dug themselves. But at the same time, if you're the Cavaliers, at this point, it's no holds barred. You got to get your players back on the court. I know that Darius Garland's dealing with like a toe issue, and Evan Mobley's dealing with a slight issue. Same thing with DeAndre Hunter. These guys got to play, because at this point, your season's on the line. I mean, the Pacers haven't just punched you in the face. They've knocked you down and curb stomped you with that win. They took Cleveland's hearts out in that game two victory. Unbelievable come from behind performance from Tyrese Haliburton and the Pacers. And then all of a sudden, the one seed in the Eastern Conference is legitimately on the ropes. And I know that you can say injuries and whatnot. The fact that they weren't able to close out that game two victory, which felt like a lock for them. They were up the whole game, Steve. I think at one point, they were up by close to 20 points in the second half. And the fact that they crumbled like that at the very end, it was a gigantic choke. And now the Pacers are looking to try and get back to the Eastern Conference Finals for the second year.
The other game last night, the late game, the Golden State Warriors going up at Minnesota, one game over the T-Wolves by getting a 99-88 victory there. Not looking good, though, for the rest of this stretch for the Warriors with news about Steph Curry's injury. I know he had minimal participation last night. Was it got 13 points in 13 minutes. But, you know, without Steph in that Warriors lineup, you seriously wonder how much further they can go.
You know, before I get to that point, you know how ESPN has like the win probability chart?
Yeah.
Like the one for the Pacers and the Cavaliers game last night is so funny because it's heavily red. It's all the way at the bottom for the Cavaliers where they have like an 80+, 90+% chance to win the game. And when you're up by that margin, you're upwards of 95+% chance to win. And then all of a sudden it just spikes all the way up to the blue. Pacers 100% chance. It was an incredible comeback. As far as last night's game went, I mean, 31 points in the first half, Steve's not going to cut it for Minnesota. And I know that Steph Curry got injured in the second quarter. Minnesota couldn't throw it in the ocean. And they really, you know, I don't know if they were hearing a lot of talk about themselves and they were feeling confident heading into the series after they smoked the Lakers in the first round. This was another stat that I saw from SportsCenter. Minnesota from three-point range, and this includes their terrible three-point shooting performance in Game 5 against the Lakers and then last night's game against the Warriors, 12 of 76 from three. They're jacking them up, but they're making them at a 15% clip right now in these last two games. These shots got to start falling for Minnesota. It's really that simple.
I was surprised to see a guy like Draymond Green on the other side jacking up threes. He made, I think, 4 of 10.
Yeah, no, he got off to a hot start, too. It's like right. 4 or 5 in the first half. But, I still like Minnesota in that series. I know that Mike is leaning Warriors. And the Curry part of it is huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a hamstring strain. He's going to be out for at least a week, which in this series, when there's only a day gap between each game, he's going to miss game two, he's going to miss game three, and he's going to miss game four with how the schedule is set up. And then he'll be reevaluated, see if he can potentially come back. If you're Minnesota, like the next three games, you got to take
right.
and get that 3-1 lead with him off the court.
You already dug a hole when you were at home already. So.
And I know Draymond's talked about it, that Jimmy Butler has carried teams to the finals before and that they're still confident in him as a leader, even with Steph Curry out. But that was gigantic news last night that he went down with a left hamstring strain. And, you know, people down here, New Orleans fans, are very familiar with hamstring strains dealing with Zion all these years. But that's what happened with Steph Curry, who's one of the most well-conditioned athletes in the entire NBA, even at 37 years old. So it's a fascinating storyline to follow, Steve, because at this point, you're Minnesota, you shot terribly in game one, and you instantly lose home court advantage. At the same time, the superstar talent for the Golden State Warriors is now out for at least the next three games. And if you're Minnesota, you got to take advantage because everyone had predicted you to win this series ahead of time. And now with Curry out, I mean, you got to go up 3-1. There's no other way. If this is 2-2 next week, it's not a good look because who knows when Curry is going to come back. We only know that he's out for at least the next week, which means that he's out for those three games. So if you're Minnesota, you're down 1-0 after a terrible shooting performance. You can't let it happen again, and you got to go up 3-1 in this series.
Someone who I do root for on the Golden State Warriors, former Pelican, and Buddy Hield. Buddy Ball's been doing all right. Went 5-for-8 last night from three-point range and led the Warriors with 24 points, man. So I guess they can lean on him for being that guy from beyond the arc while Steph's out.
Yeah, he went nuts in the second half too, Steve. I mean, once Curry went out, he was kind of their lead option, which is funny. Like, Jimmy was kind of doing a lot of facilitating. He wasn't really looking to find his own shot. And Buddy was hitting some huge shots at big times too, because Minnesota made a couple pushes in that game, right? where you're thinking, oh, they might actually make a run at this and maybe try and steal game one after such a terrible first half, because the defense started getting locked down. They got within 10 points a couple different times. But it felt like each time they went on that run was when Buddy Hield would come up with a gigantic three. I know that Jimmy had a big three as well. There was like a bank shot. He threw up a prayer and it banked in. And then Buddy came up with a three right afterwards, and a 6-0 run in that game felt like a 30-0 run. So, it, you know, once again, Buddy's been really, really good in the playoffs. I think, in his career, he hasn't been in the playoffs very often, Steve. I know that much. But he feels like a playoff riser, which is good for Golden State. And, you know, you can see if he can keep performing at this level. But like I said, if you're expecting Anthony Edwards to have the game that he had last night where he couldn't throw it in the ocean, and the Timberwolves couldn't hit a single three throughout the entire game, I don't think it's going to happen again. So I'm still leaning Timberwolves in this series, especially with the Curry news.
We got game two of the Celtics-Knicks on right now. 5 minutes left in the first, and the Celtics up 16-4, jumping out to a early lead. We'll see if they can keep that pedal to the metal over there. Definitely be keeping an eye on this one throughout the game.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll share updates. This was your boy Jeff Nowak's prediction last night on Sports Talk. He was just like, they're going to win by 30 in game two. And they very well might. But New York stole home court. And we're going back to MSG for games 3 and 4 of this series. So we'll see what happens there. But obviously, not a great start for New York, down 16-4 with about 4.5 minutes left to go in the first quarter.
After Knicks Celtics tonight, guys, we have Denver Nuggets at OKC. The Nuggets leading that series 1-0. We'll get more into that a little bit later on. We're going to take a break right now. When we return, get into some LSU baseball talk as the Tigers get ready to host Arkansas at the box this weekend. Hopefully some home cooking does those bats well. We'll talk about that with Joe Healy, National College baseball writer and SEC extra on D1 baseball. After this, stay tuned right here on WWL.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And together, we host the true crime podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crimedy.
Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk, Steve Geller, Charlie Long. Now welcome in Joe Healy, National College baseball writer and SEC extra on D1Baseball.com, joining us. Joe, how the heck you been doing, man?
Not too bad. Can't complain. We're getting down to the fun part of the season. Every game matters, and that's why we do this, is to get to this part of the season and kind of watch it all unfold.
Yeah, thankfully for us, LSU baseball back home this weekend. They had a tough go at it at College Station last weekend. A&M ends up prevailing in some really tightly contested matchups where pitching was looked at like it was at a premium, especially those early games.
Yeah, it was, it was kind of an interesting turn of events considering, A&M had kind of, the way they had gotten back into position to be a postseason team is by scoring a bunch of runs, by their offense had kind of come alive. The the weekend rotation had maybe started to fall back a little bit, but they really pitched it well. And honestly, it was just the fact that, you know, Anthony Ianson was better than Justin Lampkin on the one day that allowed LSU to get a game out of the series. And so it was, you know, it was disappointing for LSU to not come away with that series for sure. And I think, you know, I've been asked a little bit about, you know, what I think happened there. And I think a lot of it is just, you know, LSU in their struggles with left-handed pitching, which has been a consistent thing so far throughout the season. And I don't have any big picture. Concerns about LSU that I didn't already have. I just think it's one of those teams. Then there are these every year that just, you know, struggle with left-handed pitching because of the way, their lineup construction is. And that's just kind of, one of their shortcomings this year.
Joe, looking ahead to the Arkansas series, you brought up left-handed pitching, and they're going to see a pretty darn good one with Zach Ruth, the ECU transfer who's been really good for Arkansas this season, the Razorbacks ace. And, you know, he had his best performance of the season this past weekend against Texas. He was named the SEC co-pitcher of the week with Ianson, throws 8 scoreless innings against that Longhorn offense, allows 2 hits and strikes out 12. But I want to get your kind of scouting report of Zach Ruth ahead of this matchup against LSU.
Yeah, you look at the numbers on the stuff, and it's a fastball that can get up into the mid-90s, and so you think, okay, big swing and miss guy, and he does get a lot of swing and miss. He struck out 92 in 66 innings, but kind of the secret sauce for him is that he's also a guy that can get soft contact. So he doesn't have to just blow hitters away, and a lot of pitchers that rely on the strikeout pitch, you know, also have games where their pitch counts get elevated because they're going to 2-2 and 3-2 counts consistently. Well, you know, Root's a guy that, yes, he can strike guys out, but really when he's pitching well, he's sinking that fastball to where he's getting guys to pound it into the ground early in counts. And okay, if he gets a count that runs deep, he does have the stuff to come back and put a hitter away with a strikeout. But when he's really, really cruising, and I think we saw this a little bit last weekend where, yes, he struck out a bunch of guys against Texas, but also he went 8 innings because his pitch count was only 99 at the end of 8 innings. And so that tells you he was getting a lot of outs early in the count. So it's one of those deals where if you're LSU, you don't really necessarily want to run deep counts because Root does have the varied arsenal that can make it tough to hit with 2 strikes. But on the other hand, if you're aggressive early in the count, you're kind of playing into his hand because there's a good chance you're going to pound the ball into the ground. And when you've got a pitcher that kind of makes it difficult to decide how you want to attack him, that's what makes for a special pitcher, and Root's definitely that.
Looking at the Hogs offense, definitely scary with all these stats from batting average, home runs, RBI. Just break down this Razorbacks lineup and what the Tigers pitching's in store for this weekend.
Yeah, it'll be tough, especially because it looked like they came alive last weekend. There were those 3 weeks in a row when Arkansas lost series, they had started to backslide a little bit. And I never thought they were going to backslide to being a mediocre offense necessarily. But it was like, okay, maybe there is a scouting report out there that has gotten around that is an effective way to shut down this lineup. And maybe there's some of that that's still true. I think we saw last weekend that, oh, no, this is still the same lineup it's always been. They maybe just had a few weeks where things didn't go their way. But the thing that sticks out to me is they do have some star power. Vahivo Aloy is probably in the conversation right now to be SEC Player of the Year. But more than that, it's just that, you know, they can beat you. They could truly beat you 1-9 in their lineup. And if it's not the Aloy brothers, it's Charles Davalon, who's a speed power guy. It's Logan Maxwell, who's one of the best pure hitters in college baseball. It's Brent Iredale, an Australian junior college transfer who has crazy pop in his bat. I mean, they're dangerous all the way up and down, and they don't run a ton. So this is not what I'm getting at with this, but they're also a little more athletic than Arkansas has been. Arkansas has tended to be, even when they're really good offensively, tended to be kind of station to station, depending on the home run. They hit a lot of home runs as a group, but this year they can make some things happen on the bases, not even so much with the stolen base, but going first to third on a single, scoring from second on a single, stretching things from a single into a double, et cetera. So it's also a team you have to be on your game defensively, or they're going to take advantage of every little free base.
So, Joe, I'm looking at it. Obviously, you brought up the defense, but also if you just look at conference splits, they're number one in batting average at 307. They're number three in team ERA at 4.47. We're talking with Glenn West, the senior writer for Go247 Sports, earlier on in the show, and he called this like the big litmus test for this LSU team right before, you know, the end of the season and then Hoover and then the postseason regional play. Is this the most complete team in the SEC when you look at Arkansas?
Yeah, I think so. Even when they had lost a few series in a row, I was still pretty steadfast in Arkansas. When Arkansas is playing its game, it's the best team I've seen this year. I saw them in person against Georgia, you know, 3-4 weeks ago now, and they lost that series. And I came out of it thinking absolutely that Arkansas was the better team. Georgia just happened to get two more clutch hits than they did on the weekend. And so they lost 2 1-run games, and that was all it was. So, you know, I think we're starting to see with last weekend, Arkansas maybe wake up a little bit. I would also agree with Glenn in this regard that, you know, I've kind of thought of LSU as being on a similar plane with Arkansas in terms of, you know, quality. You know, it's Texas, Arkansas, LSU. I'd kind of, and maybe Tennessee has fallen off a little bit, but those three teams I've been consistent about kind of being the upper crust in the SEC. And I'm not saying a series loss here would mean LSU isn't in that group, but it is an opportunity to kind of reiterate, as people are maybe starting to question, at least offensively, LSU at this point, it is an opportunity for LSU to kind of pump the brakes on that a little bit, especially with it being a home series. You anticipate it being just an absolutely crazy crowd for this series, given the magnitude of it. And so I would agree that it is a big opportunity for LSU to prove that they are right up there with Arkansas in terms of teams that should be considered national title contenders when it's all said and done.
Some of the big names in this LSU batting lineup have, you know, struggled, especially SEC play on the road. I guess that should be expected a little. But right now, for me, one of those guys, just Stephen Milam, seems to be having a tough time at the plate, and wondering, can hopefully this series at home this weekend kind of snap him and maybe some of those other Tiger bats out the rut, even though this Hogs team is definitely going to be a fearsome foe Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, that's been, you know, and I don't have any really great necessarily explanations for why Stephen Milam has, especially in SEC play, has struggled to the extent he has, especially just because some of the peripheral numbers are kind of fine. It's not like he's striking out a ton, right? Like, it'd be one thing if you know, had led the team in strikeouts, and it's like, okay, well, he's swinging and missing a lot, but he's not doing that. He's still showing some pop. I mean, he's tied for the team lead in home runs in SEC play. That's not really his, I mean, he'd have some pop, but that's not really what you look at him for. So I don't really have a great explanation. Maybe some of it's just batted ball luck, honestly. Like, that can happen where, for whatever reason, in a relatively small sample of 24 games, maybe he's just hit a bunch of line drive outs. I don't know. I'm not watching every single pitch of every game, so I couldn't necessarily tell you, but I think one thing that in general about this LSU lineup, I think, that has been noticeable is that, I think I've said on your air before, it's just a lineup that outside of Jared Jones doesn't have that guy who, every time he comes to the plate, the risk of the ball leaving the yard is in play. They obviously have plenty of guys who can do that, but Jared Jones is the only one where it's like, look, if he decides he wants to hit the ball out of the yard here, like, there's a pretty good chance he's going to do it. And I think not just LSU, but every team in the SEC had got kind of accustomed to being able to do that the last couple of years. Well, I'm still working on talking to coaches and figuring it all out, but the home run is just not there in the SEC like it has been in the past. You know, last year there were 6 teams that hit over 100 home runs. This year, I think at most we're going to get 4 in the SEC, and that's a little bit of a stretch. It might be 3 in the SEC. And so the ball's just not flying this year the way it has been. And so I think a lot of lineups got accustomed to being able to, hey, let's just work a couple walks, put a couple guys on, and then let's have a guy swing for the fences and see if we can get a ball up in a jet stream. That's not really an effective strategy this year because the ball is just not carrying. And so I don't know if that's, you know, specific to LSU or it's just in general, but I do think that's something that's happening there. Is you know, last couple of years, it felt like you've been able to miss hit a ball and still get it out of the park. Not so much this season. And I think there are some lineup adjustments being made across the league to deal with the fact that they can't just get the 3-run homer almost whenever they want it.
Joe, looking a little bit ahead to the SEC tournament in Hoover, you know, Steve and I did a little bit of research into it. You know, was misinformed. I didn't realize that they were changing the format to a 16-team tournament. I know that in years past, it's been like the 12 teams, and then the first day was single elimination, and then it moved into a double elimination bracket. But your thoughts on Hoover, I know we're a couple of weeks out from it, but your thoughts on the new tournament in Hoover, all 16 teams get invited, and then, you know, the top 4 seeds get a double bye, and I know LSU's currently in that number, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I like it from the standpoint of it means more games are going to matter, because one of the big issues with not just Hoover, but all major conferences that are playing in the double elimination format is there's a whole lot of teams that already have hosts wrapped up, or at least already have a postseason spot wrapped up. And so what's the motivation to really push your pitching, especially if you get in the loser's bracket? And so you're going to have to win extra games to get out of the loser's bracket. There's just not a lot of motivation to really push the pedal to the metal, because do you really want to play 5 games in 5 days right before regionals? Like, no, probably not. So it just seemed like there were a lot of games in Hoover where, you know, you're pitching guys that really aren't going to be part of it in the postseason, or you're You know, you're having guys wear it on the mound because you don't anticipate being pieces that you're not worried about pitch counts with certain guys, or you're shifting your lineup around to give guys rest. And I think some of that will still happen, but I think less so because it's single elimination. You know that you're not at risk of getting, especially if you're one of the higher seeds, you're not going to get trapped in Hoover for an extra week just because you lost a game and had to come through the loser's bracket. So I like it from that standpoint. I will be interested to see what it does to the crowds because, you know, if you're a team that knows your team is going to play in a regional somewhere and you're already kind of budgeting both in terms of your time and your money to go to a regional or whatever, are you really going to spend the money to go to Hoover to see maybe one game? You know, if you're a Bama fan living in Alabama, that's probably not a big deal. But are you going to come from Baton Rouge or somewhere else in Louisiana to do that, to see LSU? Some will, but others probably won't. And so I don't know that it'll tank attendance. I'm not anticipating that. But I do wonder if it'll affect some of the atmospheres until maybe the final weekend when we get to semis and finals and people can use the weekend to come. But I'll kind of be watching that throughout the week.
We talked a lot about the LSU-Arkansas matchup. It's going to be a top 10 showdown at Alec Box Stadium. What other of these games this weekend in the SEC really grab your attention? I know I'm seeing Georgia-Alabama, even Vandy-Tennessee kind of seem interesting.
Yeah, Vanderbilt and Tennessee is a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be if you'd asked me like 3 weeks ago.
Right.
Because Tennessee was playing great. They were number one at some point. Vanderbilt was fine, but they just, you know, they were kind of the same Vanderbilt they've been the last few years, which is good, not great. Well, all of a sudden, Vanderbilt's swinging the bats better. Vanderbilt suddenly has one of the, I don't want to say suddenly, because they're always known for pitching, but the guys in their rotation are not famous like a lot of the previous Vanderbilt rotations have been, but they've been very, very good. They have, you know, one of the handful of the best rotations in the conference. And Tennessee just isn't the same. Like there's a, you know, they're really good when Liam Doyle's on the mound. Because he's maybe the best pitcher in the country. But the days when somebody else pitches, it's not just that they don't get as good a pitching performance. Oh, that's part of it. But they just don't seem to have as much juice when somebody else is on the mound. Like, you know, they're kind of a little bit flat, if you will. And I think that spills over to every part of their game. And then you can nitpick some other stuff. They're not as good defensively as they've been. Their bullpen's not as deep as it's been. Their lineup doesn't have a Christian Moore and a Blake Burke, those really scary hitters like I talked about with LSU. They just don't necessarily have those guys where you have to, you know, game plan the entire game around avoiding them. So it's just been a little bit different for them. And this is the first time in a while for a team coached by Tony Vitello in Knoxville that they've had to kind of fight through this adversity. And so this series is in Knoxville. I wouldn't be shocked if we see Tennessee do something like what Arkansas did last weekend, where it's like, oh, okay, this team is fine. They just kind of woke up. But I also wouldn't be shocked if Vanderbilt goes in there and wins this series, because clearly this Tennessee team, at least right now, is not anywhere close to on par with what they've been the last couple of years.
Joe, before we let you run, LSU's 15-9 in SEC play, and you know, D1 Baseball released their most recent field of 64 projection, and they had LSU as the 4 seed. I just want to get your thoughts on potentially the magic number for them to get that top 8 national seed and have the home road to Omaha. You know, I've heard different numbers. We talked with Todd Walker about it. He said like maybe 19, 20 is really safe. But at the same time, you know, do SEC tournament wins really count towards that number as well? So I want to get your thoughts on LSU and their path towards getting a top 8 national seed.
Yeah, they're in good shape. I would agree with Todd generally that, you know, 20 is really safe. Like, I don't know that we've ever seen a 20-win SEC team not be a top 8. Now, don't quote me on that. I don't know that, but that's just my hunch. And 19, you'd feel pretty good about it. But it is a moving target just because it also matters what other people do. To me, 18 gets you in the conversation. 19, you feel really good. 20, you're basically a lock. And when it comes to Hoover, my philosophy that I think has been proven out by the way that the committee puts the field together is that conference tournaments tend to be able to help you. They don't tend to really hurt you. So if LSU, let's say, wins 4 more games in the regular season, they're 19-11 going to Hoover, and you know they go 0-1 and they're gone. If they were in pole position to be a national seed going into that week, it would be hard to imagine them getting leapt over by somebody else based on conference tournament week. Now, again, if it's another SEC team that comes up and gets it, maybe that's one thing. But if you get the work done in the regular season, you should feel pretty good about it. The garnish is kind of what you do in Hoover.
Keep up with Joe Healy's work at D1Baseball.com. Joe, always appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us. Just 2 weekends left in SEC regular season, man.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Always happy to join you.
Thanks, Joe.
National College Baseball writer and SEC extra on D1Baseball.com. You can also follow my Twitter at Joe Healy D1. Going to take a break here on Sports Talk. Get back with more right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. 4 minutes left till halftime in Boston. The Celtics up 39-30 over the New York Knicks right now. New York has that 1-0 lead in the series. We'll see what happens at the end of this one. Talking about some NBA and Pelicans basketball, I see Jimmy from Gretna on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. What you got for us tonight, Jimmy? How's it going?
Hey, how y'all doing?
What's
doing
up, Jimmy? Well.
Yeah, look, we got bad wind today on the West Bank, but we're resilient people. We'll be back. And, yeah, some parts of Marrero got some pretty bad wind. So anybody listening, they're already getting the streets all cleaned up. They said the power's out in Marrero, some parts, and prayers for some of them. Some lost their fence and some of their roofs. So I don't know if a tornado touched down or not. But, look, let me say this. Oh, and, Charlie, listen, you're invited to come tailgate with us up in Hattiesburg. This weekend, UL Raging Cajuns, they're coming to Hattiesburg, Southern Miss and UL. I want to get your take on that. And, you know, look, we've usually had y'all's number in football, but now you got this this Howard kid, Jamie Howard's son, I think it is, as y'all's new quarterback. I think y'all got a better quarterback situation at UL than Tulane losing TJ Finley. And he's back in the portal, by the way, because his situation is still not clear. But I wanted to say something about the Pelicans. Like Steve said, Joe Dumars, one thing that stuck out to me in his some of his recent talks and press conferences and whatnot is he said, if you look at the NBA playoffs right now, most of the teams have two bigs and heavy loaded. We're going like to the old school, like Joe Dumars back with the Pistons. You had Dennis Rodman and Bill Laimbeer. The front courts are prevalent in the NBA again, you know, and Willie Green having played a lot of small ball, it seems like, you know, whether due to injuries and no choice or, you know, by voluntarily choosing that direction from a coaching standpoint, what do y'all see us doing next year? I mean, assuming Zion's here and healthy and, you know, the emergence of Carlo Mackovich and Yves Misi, do you see, with Joe Dumars in charge now and him saying that, do you see us going bigger up front going into next year?
So the NBA is different than the NFL, Jimmy, and you know that you always go best player available in the NBA draft, regardless of positional need. You know, there's some different outliers. But, like, if you're picking in the top three, which the Pelicans could potentially do, like, it's a coin flip if they're going to land in the top four or not. You're not going to reach on a center if you have a better wing or a guard available.
For sure.
So, like, let's say you get the number two pick, right? And you don't win the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes. You're taking Dylan Harper, the point guard from Rutgers, because he's the number two player in this draft class. You're not going to reach on Kamen Malawach, who's maybe like the sixth or seventh best player in this draft class. But if you're picking at six or seven or somewhere like that, sure, we can start having that conversation about drafting another center. I understand, you know, what he's saying about two bigs. You've seen it a couple times throughout the playoffs. I know Minnesota's got a couple bigs with like Naz Reid and Rudy Gobert. Houston had that famous two big lineup with Steven Adams and Alperen Şengün. It's throughout the playoffs. You'll see teams run out multiple bigs in different lineups. At the same time, if you're the Pelicans, you're not really in position to draft just a center just because you want to get a second center. You're looking to take best player available regardless of where you land. And hopefully that's going to be in the top four.
And you have Olynyk, Missy, and Mackovic available to you.
And I think Carlos showed some good things, too, this past year. You know, he was one of the bright spots towards the end of the season when he got more opportunities. I like Carlo. Kelly's going to be, you know, an expiring for the Pelicans next year.
I love what he did last season, though. Came in and immediately made his presence felt for this
team.
Yeah,
I agree. And then Missy is your building block center of the future.
Yeah.
I think that you can expect continued development from him as well. So I don't think center's as pressing of a need. It was interesting to hear Dumars say that. At the same time, I think they clearly go best player available with their draft pick. Real quick, though, going back to the Sun Belt and my Cajuns going to Hattiesburg this upcoming weekend.
Road trip for Charlie.
Yeah, no, listen, we'll see. They've been playing good ball late, as Jimmy kind of alluded to. 7-2 in their last 9 Sun Belt games, so they're picking it up here late at the end of the season. But after a slow start, Steve, the only way my Cajuns get into the postseason is by winning that Sun Belt tournament.
Good luck to them, Cajuns, Charlie. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. You can chime in, too, on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, 504-260-1870. Taking a break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned on WWL. Stay tuned for more Sports Talk coming up after the top of the hour news break. We'll get more into some LSU baseball, Arkansas chatter with what Jay Johnson had to say about this matchup against the Hogs. Plus, get into some Saints rookie minicamp coming up. Also, Cam Jordan Day is tomorrow. The voice of the Saints, Mike Haas, will talk about that with us. So join us right after the top of the hour news here on WWL. Stay tuned right after this.